Your fridge will soon be sending you text messages. No, I haven't completely lost it. It's the truth. And with me to prove it, we have Dr. Kevin Curran, who's a reader in computer science at University of Ulster. Hello to you.
Afternoon, Sean.
So your fridge will be sending you a text message. What's going on?
Yeah. Well, the Internet of Things is the ability for us to communicate with all our household appliances. So our toaster can send us a disposable text, a text that will disappear after 30 seconds because then it's no good because the toast has gone cold.
Like one of these Insta, whatever they call it.
Yes, yeah, the same. It'll tell us the toast has popped up. It'll tell us that the dishwasher has finished. It'll tell us that we need more milk. It will even order the milk for us because it knows that we run out of milk. It will know our calendar. It'll know that not to order milk the days that we go on holiday. So our devices will work for us to make our lives easier. Everything that can be connected will be connected to the Internet of Things.
All right, help me to understand this now. So how does your fridge know that your milk's run out?
Yeah, the early prototypes work in a few ways. Some, they have compartments where you place the object. So milk goes into one slot. Other ones have barcode scanners inbuilt. And as you're putting the item in, it's got barcode scanners in all directions and it scans the item and it knows that that's milk and it knows when it's going to be out of date. There's some beautiful sensor type objects out there. One is an egg minder thing that tells you, it knows when your eggs are in the place, it knows when they're going off, and it tells you which ones to use first. So these things can help us very much, and not only in the home but out in the outside world. There's so many sensors being used.
Well, you see, whatever about very posh people with loads of money having the ability to do this, I'd imagine this could be very useful for business, a hotel for instance.
Yeah.
So the knows to order the food in and all of that. Is that where we're going?
The internet is becoming de facto. So everything, a lot of us are ordering off, you know, the likes of Tesco online. So why not let the fridge do the ordering from us, remove us from the mundane tasks? Even the case of the guy earlier with the Bouncy Castle being stolen. If he had a movement detector there, it could have detected movement, set off intrusion alarms. So sometimes, not to be scared of this technology can help us as well, make us more secure in the future. Of course, there are security aspects to worry about, because when your toaster is connected to the internet, it can be compromised. It could have a malware on it. It could be used for sending out spam emails. And how would you know it? Because your toaster has no visual interface. How could you ever know that your toaster has got a virus on it? So we have problems in the future again. And what information is being captured? Google paid about 3 billion quid for a company a few months ago called Nest. Nest do a very sensitive smoke alarm which monitors temperature, humidity, movement. It's got some very cool features. You can turn it off by wagging your fingers at it. They're all trying to get into the home because they've captured a lot of our money, but they're trying to become the de facto manufacturer of household appliances. But there's a worries with that. There's an internet. We all know Google is a search engine for finding information about everything. There's a search engine I show my students. I teach computer security and they love it. It's called Shodan, and it's a search engine for compromise objects on the internet, where you can go and you can log into people's home, you can see cameras, you can see offices, you can turn off settings and all these type of devices, because all these devices are connected without the owner knowing, and they usually have default passwords, which default passwords are always the enemy of security. So Shodan, there are search engines out there for these Internet of Things already. So that is a problem. Are people aware that the baby monitor that they just bought is being connected to the internet? And there's been cases of people shouting abuse at babies.
That's right. So, I heard about, mentioned it a few weeks ago that happened, and somebody was shouting abuse through a baby monitor. They'd hacked into it.
Yeah, over the internet.
They were shouting at the poor baby. These have IP addresses.
Yes, indeed. And we got into the, you know, it's a drop cam. So
that's the downside.
That's the downside of it. But again, you know, these things can do so much for us, because who wouldn't want to be able to check on their baby from downstairs or even remotely, whatever reason that is.
How does it work? I don't understand it right. So how does it work? How do these things send messages?
They all have a Wi-Fi card in there, you know, generally. Or some of them might even have a 3G card, really. The ones in some of these are fantastic sensors. Like in forests, they have ones for protectable forests. So if a tree has been felled, it will detect it and alert the authorities. Yeah. There's cars at the moment that when they crash, they alert the emergencies and even tell them. Tell them the severity of the injuries. So again, we have this science
fiction.
How
do they do that?
Well, the impact really with the speed at which it, you know.
Because I was talking about this car device where it crashed. In fact, I was talking to a friend about it yesterday, because the car crashes and it alerts then the emergency services in case any of the people are incapacitated and that. And then Seamus Malin called me from Desmond Motors, and he says they've had it in Fords apparently for quite a while as well. And it crashes, and then, well, hopefully it won't, but if it does, it tells the emergency services, sends a wee message. And it can say how badly people might be injured.
It is, yeah. But that's because we have the ubiquity where 3G is being rolled out, 4G is coming some places at the moment, where we have this ubiquitous connection to the internet. So that's why if something, and because it becomes so cheap to put Wi-Fi chips and 3G chips into devices, it becomes so small, batteries are becoming lifelong. Some of these sensors have 10-year battery life and longer because they use very clever protocols, as we say, to communicate with each other. So we're entering this science fiction world, really, where everything that can be connected will be connected.
Are we heading? I mean, this would seem like silly stuff, but I don't think it is. We're heading to the point where people are going to have devices in them as well, are we?
Not very much. Wearables is the next thing. Smartwatches are the next product of next year. You know, Apple are coming. They're all coming. Google are coming. Wearables, you know, we've seen Google Glasses, how powerful they are. And once they perfect that and release it cheaper, we will all have it because you've got a heads-up device. Yeah, the heads-up device on your glasses. Google will have this product, which is released last year. It's about £1,500. Mostly it's developers, geeks have it, but it's, you really have a heads-up device where you can surf the internet by head movement and winks and, you know, touching. And it really is like a computer in front of you as you walk around, do your daily business.
But even here now, like, for instance, I've got the computer there and a computer there, right? So it's quite possible, isn't it, that I'll be wearing glasses.
Oh, very much.
And that it'll be all here.
Yeah.
So I'll just do a nod and I'll get your name will come up and I could get your Wikipedia on you and all of that kind of stuff just by looking at you.
Exactly, because it'll do facial recognition as well. And, you know, the worry at the moment is, you know, people have been using winks to take photographs of people, and there's a lot of bars in San Francisco around the world where they don't let people walk in with Google Glasses. But that will pass because they'll become less intrusive. People will accept it more. But unfortunately, we are moving to a kind of 24/7 surveillance society where, you know, literally you will, you know, the party to go to in the future will be what we call a mesh box, is where all communication is, you know, you literally go into an iron box, really, and it'll prevent any communication taking place inside the box.
Do you think so?
Very much. I mean, because you know,
it's getting too intrusive.
Very much. After a few drinks, you really let your guard down, and the last thing you want to see is wake up next morning to a Twitter or Facebook post with you know, looking like an idiot.
Well, people are doing it on phones at the moment, but at least you can possibly see someone with a phone. But as you say, if they're wearing these Google glasses, they can wink and take a picture of you. You don't even know it.
Oh, very much, yeah. And the worst thing is usually a poor quality photograph.
Yeah.
Even if they'd let us see it before they posted it, we could have some censorship.
So what about medically? How advanced are we now in terms of what could be happening? Because I hear there's great advances there too.
Yeah, we're seeing a new trend, actually. We can see what's happening. E-visits are becoming more popular. People are communicating with doctors, especially in the States, a lot more. They don't have to get into a car. The doctor can speak to them by Skype or with video. They can post images to each other. And literally, they can have consultations, which is just as powerful as being, because cameras are very good now. So yes, even if you have a lump on your, you know, a wart or something, or, you know, something you're worried about, you literally take, you know, you can even walk to the camera. The doctor can do a consultation then. It's cheaper, it's quicker, it's more efficient. You can do it in your lunchtime. E-visits are becoming very, very popular. The thing of the past, again, just go back to Internet of Things, the meter man calling to your house will be a thing of the past very, very quickly. Most UK has been rolled out around the world, especially in the UK, we're all getting smart meters where it's wirelessly communicating back, and you don't have to do this, let someone into your house or give this reading anymore. And that's a no-brainer. E-Viz is very popular. Also, a lot of online courses as well. You know, we're seeing an awful lot of online education becoming more acceptable, where people are learning a lot through video sites very much. So, but e-visits are becoming a really big trend.
Because they have this robot, don't they, in hospitals as well, that goes around and it can actually look at the person. The consultant doesn't have to be there. The consultant can be somewhere else, which is great, because like in a place like Donegal, where we're, you know, waiting for appointments because we can't get down, or people don't want to, can't travel, or it's too long to travel, they can have this robot that goes up and down the ward and can look at the person, and the consultant's looking at it on a screen in Dublin and communicate with the person.
Very much, yeah. And the robots in hospitals and other conferences, a lot of geeks use them, you know, to communicate when they're at home, because a lot of computing people do work from home. My favorite ones of these of late and is drones, which hover above your kid, and you put the GPS coordinates into their path to school, and they communicate for a mile. You get these for about £400, and they follow your kid, and you can watch sitting on your laptop, your iPad, as your kid, as he walks to school about half
That's
a mile away.
Good.
And then the drone flies back to your house for you.
Not good for the kids always, because the kids might want this. But yes. So that, I mean, given the last conversation we've just had, you know, the sad case of a child that goes missing, So if you're worried about your child and you're concerned because they're walking to school, you'd send a drone over them.
You can get the Parrot Aero drone too at the moment for about €400, and you can do that. You can set the waypoints for the GPS and follow, you know, if you've got a good enough connection. I'm not saying it'll go 4 miles, but at the moment it'll go up to a mile possibly, and literally watch your kid and, you know, save you getting out of your bathrobes or whatever.
And it tracks the child.
It does. It's just like remote control helicopters. You know, you've seen them. They've got kind of four hovercraft things. Mm. But you can, because they're so good now and so cheap, you set the waypoints in. The GPS coordinates, as it goes to cul-de-sac along the road, it literally hovers overhead. It's got a kind of a 360 camera, and you can see your kid walking. And like I said, this is quite cheap, and parents are using this in London.
I did a wee Google on the phone the other day and at the house, and it found me, you know, that showed the house straight away. So what picture am I? Is that an old thing that I'm looking? Because it was moving. It was like a 3D thing. It's a satellite image, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's not live, is it?
Well, no, they've started to put up live ones very much in the last few weeks. They put up some of the ones, yeah. They're moving towards live. I'd say within a year, a lot of the Earth will be live ones. But again,
this one was moving.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they put up real time satellite cameras.
I couldn't believe it.
Google themselves have invested quite a lot in that. Yeah. I mean, who would have seen Google Street View in a few years ago? I mean, there's nowhere I visit now and I don't do a Google Street View trip to see where I'm going to run, where my shop is. And when I arrive to any destination, it's no surprise anymore because I've been there in Google Street View. 5 years ago, if I told you that everywhere in the world, literally, there could be mapped, it will be mapped, and you can go and real, you know, who would have seen that? So that's why people who predict the future really are, you know, really, how can you predict the future technology?
And the other thing, of course, is that computers are going to be used to help people to sense as well, aren't they? Because they'll be able to stimulate and maybe get people to move their arms again.
Yeah,
and
very
that's,
much.
That's all moving.
There's a beautiful experiment there lately by Stanford where they use literally an MEG scanner, really, where the EEG, where invasive, non-invasive scanning to see what a person was looking at. So they really trained them, they gave them images and they recorded their brain waves. Then they could later get the person to concentrate on an image in their head, re-record their brains, and tell them what they were thinking of.
Scary.
Very impressive.
It could be used in criminal law too, couldn't
That's it? What they're saying again, yeah. You know, for, yeah.
Just find out whether you're lying.
Now, that's a long way down the line, but I love the proof of concept. I love that experiment.
Mm. So you'd know somebody would...
it's the first time ever we've seen where they can literally, within an experimental setup, see what a person was thinking.
So how long before they make a prototype human, if you like, by computer, looks like and can think for itself?
Yeah, it's a long way. I mean, artificial intelligence, it's the most difficult thing that we can do, even though we have it to some degree when we talk to Siri, when we communicate with our smartphones and we do things. That's a form of artificial intelligence. But to have human consciousness, it's hard to know if that will ever be truly achievable.
Well, what about this point from a listener? It's a good one, isn't it? Soon we'll have less jobs because robots will do. Man has undone man's work with technology. Is that true, do you think?
I'm a big believer in inward investment into digital broadband, especially in the South. The government really need to put more money in here. The more, the higher the broadband speeds in areas within businesses, within consumers, the more, the higher the GDP can be. So we can be the leaders. We can be the ones who provide technology services to companies overseas who haven't put in the infrastructure. So we can be leaders, which you have. Dublin has all the major people, Yahoo, Google, Microsoft, you name them. So we've been very good at that because we have an educated workforce and we speak English. And we're an honest country, actually, and that speaks volumes to these companies. So we can bring jobs here. But yes, globally, it's hard to, you know, you can see where machines are due, but people have to program these machines. People have to make the hardware. People have to be electronic engineers. We need a highly, a high-tech workforce. So
we should be getting in there more and more.
We could be the country that win.
Yeah, but eventually, are we outdoing people doing anything? If computers are going to do nearly everything for us, where does the person come in?
It's quite possible. I mean, it's quite possible.
What will we do with our time?
But hopefully we'll have more time for leisure, you know, and hopefully that technology will also improve, you know, that the fact that we have, more drought-resistant crops, more fertilizer, you know, that we just do better. We have more food, we have more time to have leisure time. But that technology works for us.
Because if you look at the BBC now, news, say, at 9 o'clock or 1 o'clock or 6 o'clock, right, and they do the big thing, BBC News at 6, you look then, the cameras, they're all remote. There used to be people behind those cameras. But if you look now, you see them. The camera's there, but they're remotely controlled. So that's three or four people out of work, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But there's more people behind the scenes in technology. There's more people doing the social media. So new jobs do get created all the time. You know, that there's jobs that weren't there before that aren't there now. So there's a big social media team there in the BBC. A lot of people in technology, people have to program the content. They have a lot of coders actually in the BBC as well.
Bill Gates said, according to a listener, we're going to have more robot jobs, but society's not educated to deal with it. What does Dr. Curran think of this?
Again, the government should put more money into science, technology, you know, engineering subjects, really, the technology subjects, really, and encourage people to do, again, young people to study maths when they're in physics and electronics and computer science, especially. Computer science quite often in secondary schools is woeful, the way they teach it. So I would love to see more money put into, because the teachers have only so much time, really, that they themselves really mightn't have computer science degrees themselves. So I would love, I mean, to me, even enroll your kids into computer courses. To me, piano lessons are a thing of the past. That was when there was parties, there was no technology, and it was good to have a party piece.
Oh, wait a minute, I was going to start something off here. Piano players are out of date. Piano teaching is out of date. That's going to start the ball rolling now. So you're saying, what? That's all old hat.
I'm saying that's all hat. Send your kids to a computer course.
God forgive you, but anyway, go on.
Yeah, enroll them in a computer coding course, you know, yeah. So that they know
well,
how to
code. Well, do both.
Yeah, or Twitter or social media. Get them off fay with technology. Teach them security that they know what to post, what
well,
not
look,
to post.
Well, look, the mother, you may not have heard this. For the start of the show today, we began with a mother, and her child has got learning difficulties, special needs, and he went online and he downloaded a load of apps from Microsoft for this game he's got, you know, and it was €500. Yeah. And then they're saying, well, look, you downloaded it, blah, blah, blah. But he used, obviously, he just went into the computer, saved the password. So he was ordering away and didn't realize the value of it.
Yeah.
And they don't want to know. They're saying, well, that's not our fault. The bank don't want to know because even though she hadn't an overdraft, they allowed her one, right? She doesn't understand, she said, computers. And I said, well, that's the next job now. Go and learn a wee bit. Because we need to know if we've children using computers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, the people, parents out there need to become familiar with the family settings on these. And unfortunately, they change even from the Xbox One to the Xbox 360. But the family settings, the password, the PIN code for the payment stage is crucial. Never give your PIN code to your kids. Also, within Android devices, for instance, you can have enable restrictions. You can stop in-app purchases because that's a problem. And in-app purchases, when you have 90% of apps on the iPhone and the Android market are free. They're called freemium.
That's right.
Because to get you to buy them, to get you to download them free, and then they make the money in app purchases. But you can restrict that in the iPhone and the Android
settings.
So you can stop in-app purchases again. But do not give out that password. Always, even though it's a bit of more work, always have your kids call you and you type in the password for the payment
changes
stage.
Yeah.
But even on the Xbox One, it can be complicated. You've got to log out firmly to stop because the password can be remembered even for 15
that's
minutes.
That's what happened.
Yes. Unfortunately, it can be difficult because even on the PS4, you can have a monthly limit set as well. Some of these allow you to have monthly limits, which can get around that. Give your kids just whatever, €20 a month or 30, whatever. But it is, even I find it complicated, and they change it all the time, and then settings get updated. And what was previously worked, and I knew it off by heart, I have to go and look for it again. So, again, all I can say, you know, I'd like to see more, you know, more education on this, more, you know, community centres should do this as well.
And, Doctor, what about, because I know security is your big one, and I really do worry about that in terms of, you know, people who are so clever and they are going into people's bank accounts and taking money out, they're going into, you know, this, how are we ever going to get a handle on that? You know, banks are being compromised, big companies. How are we going to get a handle on that?
Well, I guess through shows like this, really, where we talk about, again, the passwords should be key.
Keep changing
the
them.
Passwords should not be found anywhere in the internet, or any words. It should be long enough. In fact, long enough where you really have to write it down.
With numbers.
With numbers and uppercase and lowercase and strange symbols. And never reuse it on different sites. But not all sites are equal. You know, PayPal or your bank one should, you know, if something like Facebook, even though people come along and, you know, and spoof, but some, if it's only log into the New York Times, you don't have to treat that like sanct, you know. What's the worst can do? Someone can log in using your account and read the New York Times. But there are certain accounts where you really have to pay attention to, because if they are compromised, for the first time ever, we've seen banks wash their hands of passwords. That they're coming around now, finally, for the first time ever, and they're saying, you didn't have a strong enough password. And people are out of money, out of pocket in business accounts. And now that's really scary.
And it usually tells you, well, the good sites will say not strong, strong password, weak. Okay.
Yes.
If you go onto a site and they ask you for a password, say it's a legitimate site, Can people in that company, can they? Could somebody in that company check what your password is? Or is it only the computer that's supposed to know it?
Oh, no, it's supposed to be. I mean, no, that's, no, you're right. No, that should be encrypted. Any right. company worth a salt will have that encrypted. And they have it encrypted properly with what we call SOLD. It'll not be, they will not be able to break it, really, if it's done with proper encryption.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it's fascinating. It really is. It's a great, I'm sure for you, it's a great work that you do. It's exciting.
Oh, it is, yeah, yeah. I mean, I my first computer, the first time I seen a computer was 1984. It was in Creasla. My mum's from Creasla. Oh. So I went to Letterkenny RTC, 88 to 90. Seamus McFadden was the first computer I seen. He's the first cousin of Brian McFadden from Westlife.
Get away.
Brian's dad from Creasla. Yeah, Creasla. So that's where I first, and I knew what I wanted to do ever since then.
Tell me the relationship again then. So you, the first.
So my mother's from Creasla, and I went there, and that's why I came to Letterkenny, because since I was a kid, I was coming to Letterkenny, Creasla for my holidays.
Brian McFadden's
first cousin, Seamus McFadden, yeah. had a Spectrum 48K in 1984. And I seen it and I knew instantly what I wanted to do the rest of my life. And that's where I came to Letterkenny and then I moved to Derry. And even 15 years ago in May 1999, my car broke down and you, Sean Doherty, gave me a lift to work.
Get away. Tell me that again.
In May 1999, my car broke down and I was going to work in Letterkenny because I was teaching there at the time. And I was thumbing on the side of the road and you gave me a lift.
Where were you?
And the Derry, from Derry to Letterkenny, because I live in Derry, and it was May the 16th, because I know it, because I had to cancel a talk later that afternoon. My engine blew up.
And I give you a lift.
You gave me a lift.
You don't see many people thumbing now.
No, no.
You must have looked like you needed a lift that day. Yeah. Kevin, what an amazing coincidence. It's great to see you. And thank you very much for coming in.
Not at all,
and you've probably got a better car now anyway.
I do indeed.
Dr. Kevin Curran, reader in computer science at University of Ulster, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Sean.
And you've got a lookalike, you know. Micheál Martin, slightly. Okay. Do you know that?
No, I never heard that.
The Fianna Fáil leader. Okay. He's not unlike you, I'm telling you. I've had him in here too, and he's not unlike you.
That's usually Brad Pitt, I guess.
Oh, is it? Okay. No, that's another day. Thanks for joining us. 12:46. Last chat with the doctor, bringing back old memories and talking about the future as well. It's amazing, isn't it, what's possible. That's for sure. Anyway, keep the calls. That's about the future. This is about the past.